the phrase, right in, what was it, right in...
Right in fact, but wrong in Dhamma.
Does that imply that there is like an objective world of facts and then a world above that, which is Dhamma? Because, I don't know, my intuitive response is like, then what actually is a fact? You know, when someone says, because it's all mediated through the subjective lens that you look, sorry, that's a really pretentious way of saying it, but it's just, it's all the lens that you're looking through it. So like, what actually is the fact of the situation? What, is there something objective, is what I'm saying. Does that make sense?
Well, as I pedantically pointed out a few days ago, the word fact comes from the Latin facere, which means something that is constructed. Like a factory is where you make things. So a fact is a constructed quality. It's literally telling you it's conditioned and dependent in its own fabrication. Okay. So, in a way, the word fact is quite marvelously appropriate. I mean, we can say today is Saturday. That's the fact, according to human beings who speak English and who are living on this particular patch of planet Earth. It's not an ultimately true reality, but it's an agreed convention according to this place, this time. Today is Saturday, 1st of February. It's a fact, but that is constructed, that's formed. So that when the young Ajahn Sumedho was able to recount, on such and such a day, I heard you say this, he's recording it from his memory as best as he can. He's trying to speak what is true and according to his own memory or his understanding. Every memory, every expression is necessarily an approximation. Like every map can only be an approximation. You can't make a sentence or a word or any expression 100% true to reality. Saying is right in fact but wrong in Dhamma, it's a way of saying, yes, you had your information accurate, but you weren't looking at how that meshed with the reality of the moment or appreciating where that person was coming from. I didn't spell out the whole story, but what Ajahn Chah apparently said to the young Ajahn Sumedho then was, do you think I didn't realize that his mouth was really foul? And the expression that Lumpo Sumedho recounted said, bark, bark, de jai di, which means his mouth is evil, but his heart is good. So do you think I wasn't aware of it, his speech? He's been kicked out of every other monastery he's been in, and Wat Pa Phong was the last place he could be because I made a space for him. Yeah. So he realized at that moment that Lumpo Cha had been completely conscious of this monk's kind of loud and coarse, divisive and uncomfortable speech habits. But he was looking beyond that and was trying to address his pure heart. Just like the Buddha, many of the Buddha's great disciples, they killed people. And not just Angulimala, one of the great nuns, Bandha Kundala Kesa. Her husband, she had just married, tried to throw her off a cliff and steal her jewelry, but she switched it around and pushed him off instead. So, you know, she killed her husband, but she became a great enlightened nun. So, so when the Buddha met her, you know, he would have had the powers to recognize, oh, this woman murdered her husband. But he didn't let that dominate the dialogue. Or with Angulimala, you know, most extreme example, who was a sort of bloody-handed bandit who killed hundreds of people, apparently, he was able to look beyond those surface characteristics and events of those people's lives to see the heart that was underneath that and would be able to address that. You know, and those words of Lumpo Cha, he's not trying to express some kind of philosophical, ultimate philosophical position, but more, you know, Sumedho, you didn't take the whole picture into consideration. If your heart was really in accord with Dhamma, you would have seen these other aspects of it as well. That's how I would read it. Any other thoughts? That was before your time, I think.
Yes, that was before my time. But yeah, certainly that sense. I was kind of thinking, you know, just one of the underlying motivations for taking a position like that, yeah, I'm right and you're wrong. so that as soon as you come from that place, then it doesn't really matter if you've got all your facts correct. It's going to be messy. And Ajahn Chah in particular had a real capacity for drawing people in. He used something to think of Pansak, one of Ajahn Chah's very important lay disciples. And he's in the film The Mindful Way as the kind of the bar and nightclub owner. And he had many, many bars and nightclubs in the city. And he said Ajahn Chah was always so kind to him, and sometimes he'd show up drunk after work and spend the night underneath Ajahn Chah's kuti. And Ajahn Chah was, very accommodating too.
And Po Sui.
Oh, Po Sui, yeah.
He had the reputation of having been a hitman.
He was also contracted to Ajahn Chah, was one of his jobs.
He was the sweetest old fellow. He would come and spend time at Wat Nanachat. He was a monk, and he would come and spend time at Wat Nanachat when I was there as a novice, when Lumpur Pasano was a junior monk there. And he would come over. He was a middle-aged man, but fairly junior in the Sangha, and he couldn't speak a word of English, but he would come over and spend a few days from time to time at Wat Nanachat. And I didn't speak any Thai, so I couldn't converse with him. And I thought, oh, a sweet old guy, really nice. He likes to be with the Pratfarang, with the foreign Sangha. And he would sort of putter about and be very helpful and kind and thoughtful. And, oh, what a nice monk. And then I think it was Puriso told me, he said, oh, yeah, he was a hitman hired to shoot Lumpur Cha. And kind of Lumpur figured out why this guy was sort of hovering around looking looking at the seating arrangement under his kuti and hanging around and having an odd look on his face, and sort of reeled him in slowly but surely. He heard a few too many Dhamma talks, and then next thing he knew, he asked Lumpur Chah if he could join the Sangha, and was worried about those who had contracted him.
It took quite a few years.
Yeah,
took quite a few years.
The slow reeling.
He was one of a large group that ordained at Ajahn Chah's mother's cremation.
Oh, so at the same time as Puriso and Lumpur Manindo.
He had done all sorts of... He stayed close to Lumpur for quite some time as a layperson. Went Tudong with him. And Ajahn Chah was quite very tough on him.
He didn't hold it against him that he was going to kill him, but... Yeah. but he brought him in, and
that was business.
Lived a good life as a bhikkhu.